Blog Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Well, good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us on this beautiful Tuesday morning. Glad to have you with us and keep celebrating Women's History Month. And one of the things that we're doing today is talking about a serious matter, but a serious impact made by women, and it's continuing. And we want to talk about MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving. And today we have on the national president, and she's going to share her story, Ms. Helen Witte. Good morning, Helen. How are you?
Good morning. I'm very well, thank you, and thank you for highlighting MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving.
So give us a little background on MAD, because like I say, it's kind of been in the existence for a while, so people don't really think about its origins. So.
Right. Well, it's inspiring because MAD was founded by one mother who, and this was in California in 1980. The founder of MAD's name is Candace Leitner, and for her 13-year-old daughter, Carrie, was walking along the side of the road on the way to a church carnival when she was struck by and killed, knocked out of her tennis shoes, by a repeat drunk driving offender. He had just gotten out of jail after his fourth DUI. And when Carrie's mother found out that this man faced no consequences, she founded MAD at her kitchen table, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, because she learned that, and this is the incredible part to me, that Carrie was one of 25,000 people that died that year. And that's unimaginable that drunk driving deaths were considered a socially acceptable homicide. It's horrific. And so that one woman started talking to people across the country. And here's the thing. There were so many stories that she learned about. She connected with a woman on the East Coast in Maryland whose daughter, as an infant, was rendered paraplegic or quadriplegic and could not move. And they got together, and so more and more stories were coming up to the fore, and that's what changed MAD. That's what changed the country, because they put a face on the numbers. You hear 25,000 people, and that's hard to imagine, but then you start hearing the stories and the names and seeing the photographs, and it makes it personal, which is what will change a culture.
Tell me how you got involved with MAD.
Okay, all right. And let me just say before I get to that, that this is our 40th anniversary. So that's the exciting part.
Yeah.
Yes. We are celebrating this year the accomplishments that have been done through these women. And today, before I go on, I also want to say we're not all angry middle-aged women now.
Right.
We are dads and brothers and sisters and all kinds of people from all walks of life who have been tragically impacted by sudden violent death. So, and that's the way I came to Matt. My children were born in the early 1980s, so I would be seeing the people at Mothers Against Drunk Driving on television talking about what had happened to them. So when my children were babies, I would hear about the changes. And so that was inspiring. I was learning that in 1983, MAD was responsible for the 21 age minimum drinking law. We know that today's underage drinker is tomorrow's drunk driver. So, you know, that is law. And we were seeing the laws changed. Legislators were listening. So that was all happening. And then the .08 BAC was lowered as well. So I'm raising my family in Miami, Florida, where I was born and raised. And it was a pleasure and an honor to be the mom of my first. His name is Helen Marie, and she was born in 1984. And our son John was born in 1986. And Helen Marie was so excited to hear about a younger brother arriving. Actually, we didn't know it was a younger brother. We just knew it was a sibling. And
right.
She was so excited until she realized he was there to stay, you know, and she was going to have to share. And she was going to have to grow and learn, which she did. These two were good friends. My husband and I laugh and say we had the perfect names because we were John and John and Helen Marie. And I always say that Helen Marie was Helen Marie because I did not want to be Big Helen or Old Helen.
Right.
So that was our family, and they weren't perfect kids, perfect names maybe, but, you know, we prayed for well-adjusted kids. That's, you know, that was our prayer. And so we move forward, and Helen Marie is 16. She's at our local public high school doing well. She's a drama kid. I was a very reluctant drama mama. You know, I'm more of a shy person, and she wanted to, you know, be in theater. She wanted to go to New York. She excelled in math and science. And I would always laugh and say, okay, you're going to have to fund your talent with your math skills. But she was excited, came home from school, was excited and nervous about directing a play the next day. And so she said, Mom, I'm going to go on my rollerblade route. And this was about 3:30, bright, sunny afternoon. She was putting on her rollerblades, and her younger brother, John, who was 13 at the time, was putting on his rollerblades to go with her. And she said, Mom, keep John home because I want to go fast. And so he stayed home with me. I was surprised and happy that he was going to stay home with me. And she went to the end of our driveway and flipped around and blew me a kiss and said, I love you, Mom, and I'll be right back. And I never saw her again. And she had always said, don't worry, Mom, I stay on the bike path, I cross at the crosswalks, I have my route all set up. In fact, my husband John and I knew the route. And she said, you know, so don't worry. And so I sat down to wait, and I heard sirens. And I can remember thinking, oh my gosh, I'm so glad she wasn't in a car. She isn't in a car. I'm so glad. I would be worried if she were in a car. She had just gotten her license. She was one of those that went right out and got her license when she became 16. And so she'd been 16 for a little over a month. And she was just getting out on the road after all the things that you have to go through to get an independent license. And so I wasn't worried. And then she didn't come home. And she didn't come home. And it's getting to be dusk. And my husband jumps in his truck to go look for her and comes upon the scene of this horrific crash. And as it turns out, Helen Marie was on her way home on the bike path when there was another young girl, a 17-year-old girl, who was working her stress off another way and was at a local neighbor's home in the mother's bedroom. And she was with a group of young people who were doing shots of tequila and smoking marijuana. And at some point, she realized she had to get up and get home. Her parents were leaving the country, and she needed some money. And so she jumped in her brand-new car. She had a 2000. This was the year 2000. And she had a new car. She had wrecked her previous car a few weeks before. And they raced off. Two girls got in with her. So you're talking about three girls. They were drunk and stoned and speeding on the road. At some point, the driver asked for the back passenger's cell phone, and that was given to her. So now she's doing all those things and trying to use the cell phone when she lost control of the car, and it went off the road and spun onto the bike path. And Helen Marie looked up and saw the car coming, which was told to me by people at the scene. And her, you know, she was killed instantly. And the car continued on and hit a tree. And my daughter's dead at the scene. And my husband arrives probably, you know, I don't know how long later, but they wouldn't let, you know, he said, "I'm looking for my daughter. Have you seen my daughter? She was on rollerblades. She had on navy blue shorts and a white T-shirt. Have you seen her?" And they said, "Pull over here, sir." And he said at that point he started praying that, you know, she was just going to be hurt. Please, God, just let her be hurt. And then they showed him a Polaroid photograph. It was before cell phone photos, if you can even imagine such a time. And they said, "Is this your daughter?" And he said, "No, that's not." He didn't want it to be. "No, that's not my daughter." So they brought the medical examiner's van back, and my husband had to identify her body. Mm. I wasn't there. You know, the thing is, and again, you always second guess yourself. My husband was jumping in the car. I thought, I've got a 13-year-old here. Do I go with my husband and leave my son at home? Do I take him with us? And I'm thinking at this point, something horrible's happened. And so I stayed home with our son, and my husband went to go look for our daughter, and which is why he ended up by himself at the scene. And he was treated kindly and with deep respect and dignity by the people notifying him of her death and showing him her body. And they brought him home, which is where I was notified in my front yard, you know, screaming. And this is where you learn about the good work that police officers can do with victims. And now I work with officers who notify families of sudden violent death. So that's what brought me to MAD. And you're bewildered. I you know, anyone who's experienced this kind of traumatic life change, you're having trouble breathing, and you're expected to you know, make appearances in the criminal justice system, and to meet the person who killed your loved ones. So it's a bewildering process, and in the criminal justice system, and it's nothing like it is on television. People expect an hour, you know, and it's over, and it takes years for something like this to get through the court system. And all the time you're in grief. And that's the first place I met somebody from MAD, was inside that courtroom. I sat next to a woman whose son had been killed. And just knowing that she had experienced similar loss helped me. I wasn't alone. You know, you are served, of course, within the justice system. But to be served by a volunteer outside of the justice system is incredible, and it's empowering. At the time, I didn't know any of this. I was simply trying to breathe and trying to be in the same room as the person who killed my child, and be dignified, because you cannot show emotion in a courtroom. So I learned all about victim rights inside a courtroom. And as this was happening, MAD was still continuing to work, but they gave me a platform that I could learn on. I realized, you know, I thought I'd die. My whole family changed. Our son, you know, it was, my husband came home a changed person forever. So many remaining siblings turned to drugs and alcohol themselves. It is what happens, and our son did not. But so many families then suffer with addiction and drug use to get out of the pain, until you understand that that's not going to get you out of the pain. You've got to figure out how to incorporate it in your life without allowing it to become your life, so that you can live again and not be a victim your entire life. You learn to be a survivor, and then simply to live your life the best way you know how, by helping others not have to experience such completely, you know, this just never has to happen. This is a preventable crime. There are many crimes committed by criminals and you know, that are not preventable. This one's preventable, and that's what empowers victims through MAD, is we can do something about this one. And boy, MAD has done something. The deaths since 1980 due to drunk driving have been cut in half. Nowadays, we have 10,000, well, last year it was 10,511 in 2018. That's where we had the latest. Still way, way, way too many when your loved one is one. But it's a whole lot better than 25,000. So that's the power of a voice and a story to help people understand. MAD has changed the culture. Remember, you know the term designated driver? That came from MAD. That came from MAD. And we now want to emphasize designate a non-drinking driver, because so often, we know the first drink impairs the mind, and that's what you need to drive, along with your strength, you know, and your reaction time. But so that's how I arrived at MAD. I was grateful that there were men and women volunteering and staffed by MAD that were showing me, walking ahead of me, and showing me that I could survive this. And that I could become a fighter, and I could help change our culture and the way we think about drunk driving and impaired driving as well now. So that's what changed. And my daughter would be 35, which is incomprehensible to me. And she's with me all the time, all the time. So that's the story that we all experienced, and it's experienced by people all over this country and all over the world. And it's so important to empower people to make a different choice than driving while impaired.
Right. Well, the thing is that you're not alone, but the bad thing is we're still having to fight this fight. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of the changes, let's say, in the 20 years between when the organization started and what happened to you. And then from the next 20 years, you know, that have occurred now So we're going to take a quick break. I'm here with National MAD President Helen Whitty. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. If you have questions or even if you have a story to share, the number is 516-387-1944. That is 516-387-1944, and we will be right back.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Having a wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event. Need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar. Or it's a difficult time and you need to plan a wake or repast. Let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
Good morning and welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We are celebrating Women's History Month, and in the process, we are also shining a light on MAD, which is celebrating its 40th anniversary this year. Mothers Against Drunk Driving National President Helen Whitty is on with us this morning. Thank you, Helen. And I wanted to ask you about how things were maybe different for you in 2000 when you lost your daughter to a drug driver. And how you were talking about the whole thing with the Polaroids and everything, I'm sure it had evolved to some degree by the time this happened to you. What do you think is the biggest thing that may have happened in those first 20 years?
Well, there was a lot going on. I think one of the things was the culture change, just the idea from hearing all the stories that so many people were dying, and then that this could be stopped. One, the biggest law that went into effect was Ronald Reagan signing the underage drinking law, because we know that has saved. You know, they say, according to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, that has saved nearly 32,000 lives. So underage drinking was a huge problem. I think that's one of the myths that, oh, it doesn't matter if they drink. And we know today now that early alcohol use can change the way your brain is developed. That the human mind isn't developed till age mid-20s. So this gives protection to brain development and to drunk driving as well. So there's more than a one prong to that one. And then all along, all during that, MAD was working in states to reduce the legal blood alcohol content. It was originally set at 1, and throughout all the years of the 80s and 90s, MAD was working to change it to 0.08, which would lower the quote-unquote legal limit of driving impaired. It gave law enforcement, you know, a line and for people over the age of 21. And by 2004, that was happened in all states. So it started out state by state. And then in 2004, it was signed into law for all 50 states, the 0.08 BAC as a legal impairment tool.
I do remember I was actually in college in 1980, and I remember that change, and I remember seeing the frustration on some of the freshmen coming in talking about, you know, because that was kind of what they were looking for, was the partying and the drinking and everything, and that had changed.
Sure.
And it's in the crackdown that was occurring, and it's like, well, why did this have to happen to me? It's like, you know, it's not happening to you, it's happening for you, you know?
Right, right. That's hard to explain to a 21-year-old. So, yes, it's but it saves lives, and that's what we want to do. Listen, we don't Matt is alcohol neutral. You know, if you're going to drink, don't drive. But if you're over the age of 21, that decision is yours. But it's not something that the .08. Listen, we've always said the best decision, the safest decision, is to not drink anything before driving. And we still say that. And especially now with all the opportunity to use Uber and rideshare, it kind of, there's no reason to drive drunk or to drive after drinking anything. And that's the hard thing, I think, to get across. Understand that one drink impairs the human mind. And so it's just, and the risk just isn't worth it. If your life, your job, your integrity, all those things can be ruined in a second. That's the thing. Nobody ever intends to hurt anyone. And then, bang, everything is changed. So that's our message. And that's what was happening 20 years that I was seeing. Now, I don't know if you want me to go into the next 20 years yet or not.
Sure, please.
All right. Well, Matt, we're still working. And the thing that's so exciting now. Go ahead.
And the reason No. I was just going to say that. And the reason I'm asking you about the following 20 years is because you yourself, things have changed for you, because instead of listening and just hearing what they're talking about, you're fully entrenched in this now.
Right, right. I'm part of it, and I'm so grateful to be part of it because it gives me something to fight for. And what Matt is working on now is something called Ignition Interlocks. And I don't know if you're familiar with that, but this is a device that's about the size of a cell phone. And what happens is, it's a beautiful tool. So say a person is arrested for driving drunk, and say it's the first time they've been arrested. Generally, what the Center for Disease Control tells us is that a person drives about 80 to 90 times impaired before they're caught. So we always say that it's every drunk driver is a dangerous driver, not just the ones with a high BAC. It's everyone needs to understand this. So they are caught, go through the criminal court system. And so what we want to see happen is this ignition interlock put on your car. It's no bigger than a cell phone. It gets hardwired into your ignition. And before you can start the car, you have to pick it up and provide a sober breath sample. So it will test your breath, and if a person is impaired, the car will not start. So this is a beautiful tool because, number one, it teaches a person responsible drinking habits, and number two, it prevents them from driving drunk. So if a person is impaired, they can't start the car. And number three, it allows a person who's waiting for adjudication within the system, it allows them to have a normal life. They can get their kids to school. They can get to their job. They can get to a doctor's appointment, as long as they're driving safely for everyone. So this is a system that's inexpensive for people who can't afford it. The system can be less expensive as long as they can provide the reasoning for it. And in 2006, there was one state that ordered these ignition interlocks put on cars, one, and it was New Mexico. And Matt had a champion in New Mexico governor. And so anyone who was arrested for drunk driving would have an ignition interlock put in their car. Now, for 4 months or 6 months, or say you're driving with a .2, which means you should actually be unconscious, mm-hmm. but you're driving. So then you put, you know, then you might have an ignition interlock on your car for a year. So it is the only technology we have today that removes a drunk driver from driving. And so now today we've worked and we've got 34 states that have ignition interlocks for all first-time offenders. Last year, Kentucky and New Jersey was added. Those two states were added. And I went to that legislation. I spoke to the legislators along with other wonderful MAD volunteers and staff who would go with us and talk to these legislators and say, please put these in our cars. Let's save some lives, because we know that it reduces recidivism and saves lives. It reduces recidivism by 67%, which is huge. It saves lives by about 16%. And if you can save one life, it's worth it. So that's what we're working on. We have been working on. We passed ignition interlock incentive laws in three states, which in Idaho, Oklahoma, and Texas, which it just is tightening the laws rather than loosening them. And so that's what we do, is we always keep up in each state. We want to make sure that the legislation is there to protect the public. We helped defeat a legislation that would outlaw sobriety checkpoints in North Dakota because we know that sobriety checkpoints. Have you ever been through one?
No,
I have not. Sobriety checkpoint? Yeah,
no.
It's just a random pulling people aside by police officers. Should take about 3 minutes, and it is an educational tool, and it is a high visibility law enforcement tool. If people look around and say, "Oh, wow, they're checking for drunk driving," they're less apt to drive drunk. So that's another tool. Our goal is we want to support law enforcement because they're out there doing the hard work in the dangerous times at night. And so that's what we want to do, is help support them and what they're doing to keep the roads safe. And here's another example. In Wisconsin, we advocated for a new law that would mandate a minimum 5-year sentence if a person kills while they're drinking and driving. So there's all kinds of legislation that's going on. It's so interesting, G, because all states are different.
Yeah.
And so to keep track of that is a monumental job, and I'm so proud of the way MAD's doing it.
Right. And, you know, you would think, you would hope that there would be, like, just one, I guess, tough, rule across the board instead of all of these different ones per different states. If you move, then, you know, you don't know what the laws are. You have to look them up or whatever. But if you know going in, okay, this, no matter where I go, this is the law, that would be very helpful.
It would be. And that's what we've got with the 21 age minimum drinking law. And that's what we've got with .08. Mm-hmm. And now this is the other thing that I really appreciate about Mothers Against Drunk Driving. They don't work on things because they think this is what's happening. MAD has always waited for the research and the science before we advocate for change. So that's important. The science now and the research is out there that people after 0.05 are impaired. So going forward, we're working with any state who wants to propose a 0.05 law, which Utah did. Utah now is the only state in most of the world uses 0.05 as the legal driving limit. So that's another legislative tool that we have. And that we're working on. But I also, now, here I am doing all the talking, sorry, but this is really exciting. This is really exciting because we've got a new, our goal is to get to zero drunk driving, zero victims, zero people being killed for no reason, which is what happens. And so I just got back from Washington, D.C., where we are learning that technology is going to be what ends drunk driving, because you heard me just talk about the ignition interlock. Now that's punishment. That is punitive. In other words, you get this put in your car and you have to interact with it for it to work. And here's what we're hoping to see happen. First of all, we've always supported the autonomous vehicle technology that's coming along. But that may take a while to integrate a car that drives by itself, and I think it might take a while for people to get in those cars. But here's what's exciting. In the background, all this technology has been coming forward and moved forward. For example, now, you can get in a car, and you're driving along. You stop at a stoplight, and the car stops to save gas, right? I mean, some of them will stop. And then when you get going, the car. Now think about a car that would stop, or that would never start, if the driver's impaired, either on alcohol or drugs. The technology that's coming along is not. You would not have to interact with it. It would tell. There's cars now that are available, and in Europe, actually, Europe is ahead of this. Ahead of us on this is that they have cameras, and a camera that can look at the pupil of the eye and see if the driver is, you know, responsible to drive, if your pupil is too big or too small. There are things that could prevent more danger on the road. I don't have a new car. My car is 15 years old, but I've been into new cars that if you start weaving out of your lane, it beeps you, right? If you take your eyes off the road, it beeps you.
Mm-hmm.
So this could prevent people from driving impaired or drowsy or distracted, and really, really make the difference in our car crashes that happen across the nation. And we've got three legislators that are working on this with Matt, Tom Udall in New Mexico, Rick Scott in Florida, and Debbie Dingell in Michigan. And they have introduced federal legislation that would require this prevention technology, drunk driving prevention technology, in all new cars. It would be like seatbelts. And airbags. Remember, well, you probably don't remember, but seatbelts were fought. Airbags were fought. We don't want those. And now look, they're everywhere. And they save lives. And that's the bottom line. And so to me, that's the really exciting information that's going to save lives, is if you've got a car that will protect the driver as well as the rest of the public, so that we can actually believe in a day when there's not going to be another victim to drunk or impaired driving, because our cars will be so safe. So that's safety should never be an option.
No,
This is something that should be in every car. When I talk about this out in public, I have so many parents that come, oh, man, I'd do that I'd pay extra for my teenager.
Wow.
You know, and again, now, of course, I'm as a mom, I'm saying, okay, you also need to teach them responsible decision-making as a teenager. But, okay, sometimes they'll get in a car with somebody, and they don't think that person is impaired. And they can be. So all those things, that to me is so deeply satisfying, and hopefully we can get that kind of legislation passed.
We're going to take a quick break. We are here with Helen Witte, who is the National Director of Mothers Against Drunk Driving, one of the organizations I wanted to feature this month for Women's History Month. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. If you have questions when we come back, the number is 516-387-1944. Also, if you want to share a story of your own, the number is 516-387-1944. G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Gretchen Deb Simmons with Farrell Realty, but you know me as G from G's Power Hour. Much of the time when I'm not engaging with you on my show, I'm dealing in real estate in beautiful Central Florida. But because I'm here, that doesn't mean I can't help you wherever you are. So if you're looking to buy, invest, relocate, rent, or sell, please give me a call at 407-968-9387. That's 407-968-9387, and let me help you with your real estate needs.
This is Douglas Dobbs, owner and funeral director at Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community with two generations of family funeral service. With the recent addition of my son Brandon, we are here to take care of the needs of Central and West Orlando. From simple cremation to a full burial, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here to help you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs, dedicated to serving our families.
Good afternoon, and welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. March is Women's History Month, and we wanted to take time out to recognize a couple of organizations and people also. Coming up on Thursday, we will have a representative from the National Council of Negro Women. But today, we have Helen Witte on, who is the National Director of the Mothers Against Drunk Driving organization, and she's been giving us her perspective, having gone through it personally, as well as managing this incredible organization that is, you know, reducing the rate of drunken and drugged driving. So I wanted to ask you basically, what is MAD asking of the public right now in terms of curbing the addiction to drugs and drinking and driving?
Well, responsible decision making when you're driving. What we say nationwide is simply, if you drink, don't drive. If you drive, don't drink. And that's the recipe for safer roads, and a safer country, and safer families. We don't want to see any impact, but that's what we want to see, is make that choice in advance. If you know you're going to a fun football game, or if you've got a big family barbecue where you know in advance there's going to be a lot of alcohol served, go in Uber, go in a rideshare, designate a non-drinking driver, designate a friend who will choose, okay, today I'm going to not drink anything alcoholic, but I will provide a safe ride home. And that, we just want everyone home safe. And for those who work with me and who have suffered a sudden violent loss to this crime, you know, they join me. They join their voice and add their story, so that's what we want. Is we want people to have a great time and a fun time while making responsible choices.
I think one of the things that we have to do, I guess, as a society also is take away the correlation, and I know this is also happening with dealing with obesity, is taking away the correlation that in order to celebrate, you have to have a drink.
Yes.
In order to celebrate,
yes,
you have to have,
yes,
you know, a big meal or something like that, that there are different ways to celebrate. And I think once we start changing that perspective, that food and drink is needed for every let's say, special occasion, if there are other ways to celebrate, I think that's going to help curb a lot of that as well.
Yes, yes, and teaching our children that there's good ways to celebrate, healthy ways to celebrate, and it doesn't require alcohol, and that's, or anything else other than your mind and some good friends. Go out to dinner together, go out on a walk. You know, there's just all kinds of things. So absolutely.
Right, right. And then, but not just children, as adults.
Yes.
I was looking at something coming up today that I got a notice about, and it's about drinks and something else, and I'm not going to get into it. But the thing about it is, it's like, we've got to change, number one, the idea that you have to have a drink, and number two, maybe change the connotation in terms of what a drink actually is, because the beverage industry itself has exploded, where you have sparkling waters, where you have different types of coffees, where you have smoothies, you have all different types of beverages that can be used. Now, I know that's not going to work for everybody, because there are people out there with addictive personalities that that's maybe, you know, in other genetic predisposals that this may not work for them, and they have to, you know, go the extra step. But still,
right,
we have to kind of maybe change up our thinking in terms of what we need in order to have a good time.
Yeah, 100% agreement with you. Yes. And I personally, my personal story was the night my daughter was killed, alcohol lost
mm-hmm.
all its appeal to me. It just lost its appeal. And
mm-hmm.
I can tell you, I have had some of the best times since I stopped drinking alcohol. But again, it's a personal decision, and one can certainly choose what's the most beneficial for your health. But I have learned that there are ways to have just a wonderful time connecting with people and talking to people and enjoying life.
Right.
So I agree. But that's, again, that is a personal decision. And all Matt is asking is the driving part. Don't drink
right.
and drive. You know, that's that's what we want, because we want everyone home enjoying,
right.
like you said, celebrating. So
right,
that's
exactly.
Good. Yeah.
How many chapters of MAD are there around the country?
Oh, gosh. Now, see, I don't know. But they're in most states. I don't know. There are so many members. Most
mm-hmm.
states have a MAD chapter. And some of them are all volunteers. And some of them are places where we can provide staff. Again, we're a nonprofit. We're a charity. So we have to fundraise. So that's another thing. While we also want to see responsible behavior, we'd love to have financial support, because it you know, what we provide for people and for people affected and impacted by this crime, it's provided for free. I never have paid MAD a nickel for the help that they have provided me. I donate myself when I can. It's people think, oh, well, there's MAD everywhere, and MAD is everywhere. We have volunteers everywhere, and it's hard work. And that, to me, that's part of the inspiration of being traveling across the country, which is what I do now. Is meeting the people, the boots on the ground. I volunteered for MAD for 11 years after my daughter was killed, and then I went on staff and went into schools, because for 9 years in Miami, I visited schools and talked to students and went with students and brought young people who are just out of prison, because I want students to understand what can happen in the blink of an eye. So that I did that for 9 years, and then I was going to retire, actually. And this opportunity came up to serve for two more years in this capacity. So that's what I'm seeing is across the country, I'm meeting people like me when I was volunteering that was like, what can I do? Take, you know, let me go talk to a legislator. Let me go do this. You know, so that's the inspiration.
So when you say volunteer, what do volunteers do? What type of things can they get involved with?
Well, there, you know, it's hard because so often volunteers are just that. They have a certain amount of time. We would say you could help us with, first of all, depending upon what your talents are.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we'll have people that volunteer who have experience with grief. And then we could say, well, then you could help us with maybe a grief support group or a person who is in maybe in the justice system. We could say, all right, you could help us going into the courtroom. You could help us explain to a raw grieving victim what victim's rights are and what will happen inside a courtroom. We have an annual fundraiser in most states, which is a Walk Like Mad, and that's where people get together in the community and raise money to help us provide the support. We have people going into schools like me providing. We have free programs for parents and students because we know that students are the number one influence a student has on their decision to use or drink alcohol is their parent. So often parents think, oh, you know, it's just that bad friend. 75% of all young people, and I know this from working with them and from the science, again, that MAD provides, that 75% of all young people say they make their decisions on alcohol based on their parents.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be another thing a volunteer could do is help us provide these programs. So the other thing that we have is court monitoring. So people can sign up for court monitoring and go in and monitor what's going on inside a courtroom. What's happening to the people that are being arrested when they go before a judge? What's happening in courtroom A or courtroom B every day?
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the opportunities, depending upon what a person's talent and experience is.
So... and you said also, which I think is great, is that now it's not just moms, it's everybody, including men, that are joining the fight against drunken drug driving. So when did that start?
It was always there. I think people always just thought it was mothers because that's the way MAD worked, M-A-D-D, Mothers Against Drunk Driving. It always was there, but dads and brothers wanted to volunteer. And some of the strongest voices that I've worked with are from the brothers and the dads and the granddads who have tried to pick up, who have tried to piece back together a shattered family. And it just depends upon the impact. Sometimes it's the main breadwinner who is impacted or killed or injured. That's something I haven't talked about, but the injury that can happen. There's more injuries, of course, than there are deaths. And sometimes it's a broken neck, not just a broken toe. Mm-hmm. So it is so wonderful to have the help of everyone impacted.
Wow. So who do they contact? How do they get involved? Just all of the information that you want to give.
Well, you know, the best is because, again, it's different in each state. It's the organization, depending upon what can come from the state, I would always recommend that people go to madmadd.org. And
okay.
On that website, you can see the programs that we have. You can check your individual state to see what there is. You can just get yourself some education on that website because they have the facts. I hate to use this word. It's sobering when you see the number of people that are injured or killed. So that would be the best place because we also have a 24-hour victim hotline. So it's 1-800-GET-MAD. And if you are impacted and if you want help, call that number. It is manned 24 hours a day for free, free to the caller. And I have found it's a place where people can get information and comfort and compassion for a crime that kills way too many people. So that's something good to know, the 1-800-GET-MAD.
1-800-GET-MAD. Okay, great. And we have posted information about MAD on the G's Power Hour Facebook page, so you all can look and find out a little bit more about Helen and a little bit more about the organization and even how to contact our local chapter here in Central Florida. So what month is it that is your actual anniversary date for MAD? Is it this?
My daughter was killed on June 1st, 2000.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's what, and as soon as I could pick up my head and learn that I wasn't going to die, MAD started walking with me to places where I could meet others.
Mm-hmm.
And where I could share my story and my daughter's story. My story's not over yet. Hers ended.
No.
And that's something I learned at MAD.
And if I may ask, and you don't have to answer, but how's your family? What's the status of your family?
Thank you. They're my reason for being. Thank you. They're well. My husband is well. He's retired now. We did lose our family business at the time, so it was huge, huge impact for us. My son as well, he's living in New York at this time and writing his PhD. So all the things that can happen did not, but we're forever changed. And I always describe this as you're shattered. And every little piece of you isn't dead. It's stinging and it's hurting. And you've got to figure out a way to put yourself back together. You become a you're never the same. And I'm sure many in your audiences have changed through life experience. But you're never the same. But you can build yourself back up to a stronger, more compassionate person. I will always want my daughter back, but that's not going to happen in this world. And my goal is to do the best thing that I can with my remaining days.
Well, Helen, I thank you for taking the time out today. Really appreciate it and sharing that. And we just hope that your story and the stories of others that are with you will continue to impact others and make a change, and we continue to win into this fight against drunken and drug driving. Thanks so much.
Great. Gee, thank you, and thank you for shining a light on what's happening.
Really appreciate your time. Have a blessed day.
You too. Thank you.
Tomorrow on G's Power Hour, one of my pet peeves, customer service. So we are bringing back Adam Torporek to talk a little bit more about why things aren't sticking between the time that some of these employees are trained and the time that you encounter them when you're getting your food or buying your clothes or whatever it is. So we're going to talk about that tomorrow. Have a blessed day, everyone. This has been G's Power Hour. I never had it so good entertainment. And please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.
Give up the high. the highest praise.